All right, a pleasure to bring in the third base coach of the San Francisco Giants. He's the professor, and that is Ron Wotus. Well, how are you today?
Marty, I'm doing well. A late starter on here on a Sunday morning, so this place was already a hustle and bustle when I got here. But we have a beautiful day. It's real calm and sun shining and a beautiful day here at the ballpark.
You know, you bring up the start time of the game, and just thinking about it for a second, I know it's 4 o'clock, and, you know, you get the shadows and the sun and all that, and yesterday Turner hit a ball that maybe Slater had a shot at, but it was a tough sun field. What's it like, really, playing a game at 4 o'clock with center field?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough with the sun. I mean, the sun sets in center field. Extremely difficult for the center fielder because it sets, behind home plate, shining onto the center field. It doesn't set in center field, but it goes over the top of the stadium behind home plate. And you're right. He couldn't get a good look at that home run. Of course, it went over the wall. It would have been a difficult catch, but there was another ball yesterday in left center that got in the sun on him at that time of day. It was about 5:15, 5:30. And luckily for him, it came out of the sun and he made a nice catch. But one of the tougher fields at a 5 o'clock start and all the playoff games and ESPN, et cetera, games that we've picked up over the years, it's always been tough because of the shadows and also that sun setting behind home plate.
So what do you do as an outfielder? How do you deal with that?
Well, they do drills where you want to, you got to be aware of the sun. You want to communicate with your other outfielders just like you do in the infield. If you have a real bad sun field and the ball's up in the air long enough, maybe the corner outfielders would take it. Of course, on line drives and most of the ball's hitting the outfield, you're just at the mercy of the sun, but you can do drills. You can do drills when you want to get an angle on the ball when possible, if it's up high enough. Line drives are just, you just battle it and wait, and hopefully it comes out of the sun. But, there's times you would get to the side of the ball and look at the ball from a different angle so you're not staring into the sun and the ball will come out. But even when you do these drills and you work on it, it's always a difficult play.
Yeah, especially if you do the drills down in Arizona, that's a tough place to do it as well. Well, what about a hitter? And they talk a lot about the ball coming out of the shadows and all this kind of stuff as a hitter. What does it do to you as a hitter trying to adjust? What's that like?
Well, you don't see the ball as cleanly as you do. A lot of people say you throw more breaking balls because, you see a fastball coming, you kind of swing to the line of the fastball. It's a little easier to hit than the breaking ball. But again, it's one of the things you just have to battle through with the shadows. There's really not much you can do as a hitter to adjust. We talked about the outfielders or infielders on a sun ball. But when you're at the plate and there's shadows and you don't get a good look at that baseball, it just makes hitting that much more difficult.
Mm. And then you take a guy like Buehler, and I remember this from all the good pitchers, Lincecum and all the rest of them, Kane, and you get a guy like this. What makes this guy so tough? I mean, he's probably going to win the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, he's right up there, no question. But he has stuff. You mentioned Lincecum, and he had stuff. It's hard to distinguish between that split change he would throw and the fastball. It comes out of his hand like it's a fastball, and then there's, 10 mile an hour off the pitch. You can't recognize it. And with the shadows, it's harder to pick up the spin and see those types of things because you're not getting a good look at the ball. But Buehler's at the top of the list. Look, he's got an overpowering fastball. He will throw it up in his zone, which, everybody likes today because it can be a difficult pitch to hit. But he can spin the ball, too, has a couple of good breaking balls. And then you throw in this location. A lot of people say pitchers don't locate like they used to, because they throw so hard. But the real good ones do. I mean, they don't locate all the time. But a well-located fastball at 96 mile an hour is tough enough to hit on its own. But then he breaks off one of these tight spin breaking balls. He's difficult. He has stuff, and he gets away with mistakes, and he's got the total package.
Well, you can run on him a little bit. I don't know, how these situations have come up, but 12 stolen bases, only 3 caught stealing, and the Dodgers, you can run on them. Why are they so accessible, sort of, to the stolen base?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they just have a lot of pitchers or the people that are handling their pitching believe in the pitcher making the pitch first opposed to trying to deliver the ball quicker to the plate. You're exactly right. They've given up the most stolen bases in the league. Bueller will get slow at times as well. And that's kind of their philosophy. They have good stuff, and they feel these pitchers, they have such good stuff that if it takes them a little longer to get the ball to the plate, so be it, because they're still going to strike you out or get you out. I remember Bumgarner was like that. A guy would get on second, and he didn't want to slide step and do all these things. He goes, you know, he's not getting the hit anyways. You know, he would say something like that. So, you know, it's their preference, and they're certainly good pitchers, and you can't argue with the results.
I miss him. You know that?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I do.
Not only on the field, but his personality, his everything about Bum. You know, I think he was a fan favorite, and certainly was you know, one of our great pitchers of all time. The things that he did, but his personality, his competitiveness. You know, we talked about him before. He was always ready to compete. You know, you better play hard behind him, because if you don't play hard behind him when he takes the mound, he would point it out. And then the next day, I'll never forget, he'd be out on the field at 3 o'clock tinkering with his delivery and his grips. And that's just the type of player he is.
Yeah, Gaylord Perry was like that. If you made an error behind him, you didn't want to make an error. Duane will tell you this. You didn't want to make an error behind Gaylord Perry.
Yeah, you know, Marty, he's a throwback. You don't see that much in today's game, but Bum would be vocal about it. He'd be vocal about it in the dugout. And, you know, there'd be times he'd ask for certain players on the field, you know, and he was our ace. And sometimes he'd prefer, a defensive center fielder or a defensive third baseman. He loved Pablo at third, believe it or not. You know, Pablo was a very reliable third baseman, didn't have great range, but he made all the plays for him. He had good hands and an accurate arm. And he always wanted Pablo in at third when he pitched.
Boy, interesting. Who do you like in the outfield?
Well, anybody that can run the ball down, right? I can't remember all the different players we had, but, you know, you go for offense a lot in a game. And, you know, the old thought process is you have your ace on the mound. You want to put your best defense out there, because you don't want to get beat, with the defense, and you scramble to score runs because you figure your ace is going to hold the other team down. So, we did that quite a bit. I think the seventh game of the World Series in Kansas City, we did that. Yeah. We could have started Ishikawa and left, but we did not, because we didn't want to lose the game defensively. And we started Perez, right. and it worked out, right? So that's a little bit of the thinking there.
Yeah, I remember Perez, and didn't he kick the ball to Blanco? They were playing soccer with Gordon running.
Yeah, we didn't anticipate he was going to play soccer on a ball in the gap. But, it all worked out. Thank God they got that relay throw in to Craw, and Craw secured it. And once Craw got that ball in his hand, the third base coach over there, his name eludes me right now, but yeah, there's no chance he was going to send him. He caught a lot of flack. They wanted him to send him, but he had Perez coming up at the plate against Bumgarner, yeah, and he was one of those guys. So he made the right call.
Boy, Sal Perez has 40 home runs this year. Sal Perez, 40 home runs. Well, how about that?
Wow. Well, he's got the power. I mean, he's always been a very good pull hitter, and he gets the bat head out there and can hit it out of the park. That's a great year.
Boy, interesting. Well, it brings up a good point, and that is going down the stretch. And it's interesting to hear you talk about the Stars and the Bumgarner, Lincecum, and guys like that, Craw. They would lighten the mood a little bit, too. They're very competitive, but for some reason you had that feeling that maybe it was Bochy, maybe it was Felipe, maybe it was Dusty, and Cap's got to figure out how to do that, too. You got to lighten the mood a little bit going down the stretch. How did the other managers do it?
Well, you know, Dusty was the master of relationships in that clubhouse. And, you know, when you have good teams and you have championship teams, you usually have a lot of veterans on the club that set the tone. Right. And, you know, I've heard his club here talked about like that. You know, there's no panic. They don't get too excited. They stay even keeled, even though deep down inside there's fierce competitors. You know, you think about Vogelsong, You know, you didn't have to do much for him the day he pitched. He was a fierce competitor. We just mentioned Bumgarner. But Dusty would do it, you know, when he needed to lighten the mode. He did it more individually, talking to guys. You know, if he felt the guy was pressing or uptight, you know, he'd bring in some soul food, call him in the office, have the music going, and he'd tell him to sit down, and then he'd give him a meal, you know. Just kind of change the moment a little bit and take the pressure off and just connect with guys. Dusty did a lot of that. You know, Boach had some great meetings. He had some great meetings that he's had over the years, and to get the guys refocused. But with a veteran club, it's more about these guys kind of set the tone in that clubhouse, and you look to their leadership when you're going through a tough spell in these tough games. You know, the young guys see how they go about it, and, you know, it's always better when a player can touch up a player and tell them to relax or, hey, you're okay, those types of things. But it would definitely start at the top as well.
Well, over all these years that you've been the coach, you've been down the stretch and you've won World Series titles and everything else. What about Felipe? I mean, you've seen a lot. What about Felipe had to have some little quirk, I imagine.
Well, yeah, Felipe, you know, he was more in tune to the game you know, I'm sure he had his conversations with guys here and there, but he was so even keeled. You know, he was the same guy every day on the field, fierce competitor. And, you know, you have the rest of your coaching staff, too. And I think a lot of the coaches do a lot of that today with the guys by the way they prepare them, just the conversations you have with them. We've talked about it before. You know, when a guy's pressing, you build up his confidence. You keep it simple and tell him how good he is. And you know, we just talk about that a lot, Flan and all the guys. We just wanted to pump the guys up because when you're struggling on the field, you need someone there for support at any level. And that's what we try to do, keep it light and pump the guys up and make them feel good about themselves as opposed to adding pressure and say, you got to do this or do that.
Boy, you've been there. You've been through it all, three World Series titles, other World Series, and division titles. You've seen a lot, so I'm glad that we could talk about the managers you worked with. Well, you made a big decision this week. You got a lot of notoriety, and a lot of people reached out to you, Woe, and that is that after this year, you're not going to coach anymore on the sidelines, and that must have been a very tough decision to come to for you.
It was, Marty. It's probably one of the top three decisions I've made in my lifetime, you know. You have big decisions to make, and it was not easy. I love this game. I love the players. I love being in the clubhouse. I love everything about it, the people coming to this ballpark and saying hello to people, and it's a great work environment. But it's just time for me. You know, I talked about it a little bit about being able to do some of the things, the opportunities you missed because of this game. You know, I've been doing it since high school, and I still love it, and I want to stay in it, and I want to help in another capacity. But it's time for me to try to do it in a different way and spend a little more time with some of the things in life that we miss out on because of our job. So that's the bottom line.
What was the reaction? The texts and, you know, they've elevated you. You're an icon. You're on everybody's computer screen now. They got a picture of Ron Wotus. You're now an icon. The reaction was amazing.
Well, it's very heartwarming, and I'm very fortunate and blessed. You know, I've had so many texts and so many people reached out, and it really makes you feel good that they respond this way. I mean, I've had general managers, of course, ex-players, people you haven't coached in a long time reaching out to you, fans, you know, media personnel that I've known over the years, just everybody. So, you know, I'm so grateful to the Giants and really to Brian Sabian, first and foremost, who gave me my start here. Right. And him and Dusty. And, you know, Brian was probably the driving force behind me, at least staying through two manager changes with Felipe and Boach coming in. If he didn't want me on the staff, I would have been gone. So I'm indebted to a lot of people for my chance to stay here with the San Francisco Giants. And it's been the ride of the lifetime.
And now you're known as the professor.
Well, thanks to you, Marty. Thanks to you. I am the professor now on your show, and I've enjoyed this show as well, Marty, and I can't thank you enough for having me on. It's been so much fun over the years, and I really enjoy talking to you because you do such a great job on the radio.
Well, we have fun, and you could. Well, I'll tell you this honestly. I watch Flan on TV, and you know, Flan does it, you do it, and there's just something about the way you explain the game and the way you relate to people that makes you special on the radio or TV or wherever you want to go with it. So you've got some interesting things coming up. Let me bring Bill in because I know Bill's got a lot of feelings about you as well. So, Bill, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Marty, and congratulations, Ron. Great season. I mean, this year on top of it all, and again, the announcement of your retirement. I thought they did it really well and giving you some time to speak about it. But, you know, from me to you, I've known you for so many years, just like Marty has. And there's a lot of baseball players and people that you have really done special things with. And I had Joey Amalfitano on, and he couldn't speak highly of you, and you did the same thing to him. And I think the mold with both you guys are so similar. Again, Ron, congratulations on just a fantastic career.
Well, thank you, Bill. I mean, that's the hard thing about all this. You know, it really touches you, all the people that, you know, have been part of your life in baseball. You mentioned Joey Amalfitano and what he's done for me. And, you know, those are memories I'll have for a lifetime, and I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss that with the current players and coaches and all the people. You know, Bill, it's the best job of your life as a player, right? And the second best job is being on the field coaching. You get to compete every day. And it's been fantastic.
Boy, terrific. I'm so glad for you, and you got a lot of good things ahead, and you've taught so many. Look how many gold glovers you got. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really special when you can develop your own players and you watch them flourish at the major league level. You know, I mentioned, obviously, you know, Buster and Craw and Belt, but, you know, there's Rich Aurelio, Bill Miller. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of players. And, you know, it's a job of the lifetime, no doubt about it.
How about Vizquel? You must have had fun with him.
Oh, well, shoot, when he came over here, I just didn't want to screw it up, right, Marty? I mean, this guy has the best hands in the game, bar none, and he was already a great defender. And we've said it many times, when you sign infielders like that, it makes you a real good coach.
Yep. Tony La Russa always said it. Give me a good bullpen, and I'll show you a winning manager. And
That's right.
Oh, never forgot that. Hey, last night we had a balk call. And, well, I'll tell you, I still haven't seen it. You know, I never see the balks unless a guy drops the ball. So last night was one of the craziest. I'll let you comment and Bill comment on it. But what happened last night with Quintana?
Well, it's a new rule that they put in place about 4 years ago that when there's a runner on third base, the pitcher has to declare whether he's coming out of the stretch or the windup. And the reason they put this rule in place is the old traditional windup that everybody used to have where you're facing the hitter and you step back, the hands go over your head, and it's, you know, it's like the Juan Marichal, you know, setup windup that everybody has seen. That was tradition. And now young players, major league players, they start their windup looking like they're in the stretch. You know, I'm the rubber from the side, and then they step to the side, and then they bring their leg up. So, you know, umpires need to know, runners need to know whether they're in the stretch or the windup. And so he was in the stretch because the man was on second base for three pitches. Then there was the pass ball, wild pitcher pass ball. Runner goes to third base. And now he starts on the side, which looks like his stretch position or his windup, but he went into the windup. And the umpire called a balk because he didn't declare that he was in the windup. And my disappointment with the whole thing is that I told Adam last night is, you know, every time we've been in that situation, I've seen the umpire ask the pitcher, are you going to be, you know, to declare if he's going to be in the stretch or the windup. And, of course, nobody did that, but they tell me it's on the player. And poor Quintana, I mean, every time he's been in that situation, the umpire has said something to him about it. He's been in the league for 10 years. And it's not something that he's thinking about in that moment. He's always been able to, in the previous years, just go to the windup with a man on third and not tell the umpire anything. So it's unfortunate. I hope they adjust that rule to make it mandatory that the umpires have to ask the pitcher, opposed to putting it on the pitcher's head, because he has so many other things to think about.
Bill,
hey, Ron, a point on that, Ron. Is it most of the time what umpire should ask that question? Is it the home umpire that usually steps out and says, are you coming from the windup or the stretch? And the other thing about Quintana, I thought he was in the stretch position the whole time. Now, if he starts in the stretch, does he still have to ask the umpire or tell the umpire, now I'm going to be in the stretch? I mean, it seems like it's so strange. And then they don't even give him a warning. They don't even call timeout to say which way you're doing it. And next thing you know, they call a balk and a run scores, and everybody didn't understand it. I still didn't. I was going back and forth on my remote to see what he did wrong. I couldn't tell what he did wrong.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is on the it should be on the home plate umpire, and I've seen it numerous times where the home plate umpire points at the pitcher and tells him to declare stretch or windup, and reminds him of this silly rule that they put in place. And, of course, that didn't happen. But if you really watch him, he is looking like he's in a stretch. But then, he doesn't go set. He brings his foot back and he brings his leg up. So there's constant movement there like a windup. So it is different once he gets started. And that's why they called the balk. And, the home umpire didn't say anything. He didn't warn him. He didn't ask him. And that was real unfortunate in such a big series that we had to give him a run because of that call.
Boy, they got to change that one. That's another one. Well, you got a lot to do here on replay and balks and everything else. You have a full agenda. You know that.
Well, the rules keep changing, Marty. That's the difficult thing about, being a bench coach today or coaching on the field or managing. You play this game your whole life, and now so many rules have changed. You got to keep up on them, and it's, when you have experience doing something, you've been in the league 24 years, but, in the last 3 years, they have four or five different rule changes. It takes away that experience of being in the moment and dealing with it. So, you got to be on top of everything today.
Well, maybe Ron could be the new commissioner of baseball, because a lot of the things that Rob Manfred's doing is sure disappointing in the baseball world, and all these rule changes and, going into a playoff game, and if you're tied, you're playing one game to see who's going to win the division. There's so many different things that are adjusting, and as fans, as in media, we don't even know some of the changes, and that's what's questionable in so many different things, Ron.
No, you're right, Bill, but you're wrong about one thing. They don't want me as commissioner, because we'll be back in the 1980s when we played. All this other stuff would go away.
Well, a lot of good defense this week, and, boy, I thought of you so many times. One, the little second baseman blocks the bag with his leg when the steal attempt happens, and I'm thinking about that one. But the one that came to mind for me was the throw from right field. And I forget who did it this week, but the throw from right field, which is a short throw. But we've had some pretty good right fielders make that throw to second. And we had one this week with Vogelbach. And I don't know where he was going, but this is one of those baseball characters. And he got thrown out at second in a pretty close play, an important part of the Brewer game. What do you think of Vogelbach to start with? And then we'll talk about the throw.
Well, look, he's a hitter, that's for sure, right? And you look at him, and he looks like he belongs in a Brewer uniform, the old beer-drinking Milwaukee Brewers. And, it's funny, when you see him up close, he's the spitting image of Chris Farley from the comedian. And I talked to the guys over there in the other club, and they said he's a tremendous guy. He roots for his teammates. He can play Farley to a T. So I'd like to see that at some point. But you're right about the throws. It's a short wall. We've seen a lot of outfielders make that throw. When that ball's hit down the line, you have a shot. Especially if you're not playing in Triple's Alley as the right fielder, but you're playing more straight up, you got a shot to throw that guy out at second. And it's happened a lot over the years, and we've had some good ones.
Well, Schierholz comes to mind for me. And he understood that the distance, and he had a great accurate arm.
Yeah, he did. You know what, Marty? You mentioned his name, and I think you're dead on with that he's probably one of the best. I mean, there wasn't many better than him. He made that throw a ton. He had great arm strength, and he was accurate. And he played a great right field for us, and I remember him. I don't know how many people he's thrown out. but he definitely comes to mind of throwing that guy out at second base on the ball down the line.
Well, a lot of good defense this week. You know, they did everything right. The throws to the plate were in the perfect position. Posey made the tag. We must have had three or four plays at the plate with the game on the line where you better make a good throw to the plate. And Craw did it. Second baseman did it. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, we had a lot of one-out situations and guys at third with speed. And even in the extra innings, you know, you got to score that run. And so we did have a lot of plays at the plate. And, you know, the biggest thing for me when that play happens is my biggest fear is the catcher's going to drop the ball. Right, Bill? I mean, you get that throw. We made some perfect throws. When they reach back with that tag, how many times have you seen that runner, you know, spike the glove and kick the ball out? And I'm always holding my breath that, you know, when Pose makes that great swipe tag, that that ball doesn't get kicked out of his glove.
You know, another play, too, was Gausman on that play where he kind of gloved it and went home with it on that little dribbler out in front. And that's such a tough play for a pitcher because you're trying to make a good throw and you're trying to get something on the ball to Posey. And I thought he did that perfectly.
Yeah, he did. You know, those are the plays that you work on in the spring, right, Bill? All the PFP plays.
Hundreds of them.
You know, hundreds of them. And then you go 4 months and you don't do anymore. And then you got to do it. You got to do it with a packed house and a big moment. So it was a great play.
Hey, what about the second baseman who blocks the bag with his leg? And, you know, a guy comes in with his hand, it's trouble. But you come in with the spikes, so that's the last time he's going to do that.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of guys over the years, and one, I know Bill knows who I'm talking about. We've seen him play here a lot. He played for Philadelphia, and he played for the Dodgers as well. And he used to block the bag on steals and also pickoffs from the pitcher. He dropped that knee. Do you guys know who I'm talking about?
I was going to say Utley, no?
Yep, it's Utley, Chase Utley, and he was the best at it. Hard-nosed, just like leaning into the pitch at the plate. You know, these guys sacrifice their body for the competition of the game. And you know, no one's ever going to say, umpire's never going to call a guy safe because he drops a knee on the tag. Mm-hmm. You're just putting yourself at risk, as you said, to get spiked, to get cut. And, there, you know, years ago there was many, many guys that did that, but it's kind of gone from the game today.
Ron, didn't they change that? Did they put a rule in for that?
Not that I'm aware of, but, you know, they're always changing, so I should we should call Eddie Montague and find out. I mean, I think if you fall down and physically try to block them off, but if you're kneeling to make a tag and your leg goes down, I don't know. I don't think there's a rule in place.
Yeah, they did it. I think Estrada was the one last night, if I'm not mistaken. I think with Betts coming in. On the stolen base. Boy, what a week for you. What a week for the Giants. And we got Giants-Dodgers tonight. And your Connecticut guy, Leone, opening up against Bueller. And then it's off to Colorado. And your big decisions this week. Well, this has been some week for you. So let's talk River Islands. There's good things happening at River Islands. We talked last week about Don Johns and what's going on at Islanders Field with all the high school baseball showcasing going on, but soccer as well. And you know John Doyle.
Yes, I do. And, you know, boy, what a couple of great coaches for the youth in the area to have access to. I mean, John Doyle, he's done everything in the game of soccer. And I guess every weekend he's having clinics and things going on there, just like Don Johns does at Islander Field with all those soccer fields. And, you know, John Doyle, people that know him, they need to Google him and get your kid out there to be around this guy because he's a tremendous coach, was a tremendous player in professional soccer. And, you know, it's an opportunity of a lifetime to go out there and get this done.
Boy, nice. And, of course, there's new parks that are going to happen and the new community park, 15 acres, with softball diamonds. I may come out of retirement.
Well, Marty, if I'm not mistaken, somebody had told me that you had over 2,000 wins as a softball pitcher in the Bay Area. I don't know if it's true or not, but as much as you talk about softball from Brooklyn to here, I bet you it is true.
Well, the legend grows. You know that. When the legend is better than the fact, then talk about the legend. So, but it would be fun. It would be fun. I did pitch a lot, I'll tell you that. Well, have a great afternoon, and congratulations, and there's good things in your future. And if it's media combined with coaching, and it's all out there for you. You've done a good job. So I appreciate
Thanks, Ron,
being on.
Well, guys, great being with you. I look forward to talking next week. And let's get this game today. It's a big one.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Will. Bill, you got JT Snow coming up.
Yeah, a giant popular player coming up. Of course, he did some broadcasting for the Giants with John and Dave, and now he's in Sacramento doing Rivercat TV with Johnny Dasco, and I got to catch up with him. So that's coming up next.
What a fielder. I always said watching JT Snow play first base was like watching a shortstop play first.
Oh, he was fabulous. Six
Wasn't
gold
he?
Gloves. Wow. Just fantastic.
Yeah. I'd like to get his thought on blocking the base with his leg. I don't think he would do that. But, boy, what an interesting guy. All right, very good. Well, Bill will be back with JT Snow. We got more coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5. It is Sunday night baseball to wrap up this three-game series. It's going to be an interesting night. More coming up on the Sports Leader.